Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu
Shanti, Shanti, Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, done then. Okay, further considerations of Rasa Tattva, Part 1, Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, and Vyabhachari Bhava. Goswami, yesterday we spoke about Vibhava. Today we will cover the other three Samagri Bhavas. Anubhava, subsequent ecstasy, Satvika Bhava, constitutional ecstasy, and Vyabhachari Bhava, aggressive ecstasy. Right. So these are the Samagri, these are the ingredients of Rasa. Right. Stai Bhava is the actual Rasa itself. Right. That's what you once fixed in. Like Mother Yashoda, her Stai Bhava is parental. The gopis, then it's conjugal. The cowherd boys, then it's friendship. Does that make sense? So that's there. Then there's the ingredients of rasa, what makes the rasa happen, right? So we've discussed the vibhava, which is what makes everything else, what starts the whole thing happening, right? There's the qualities of Krishna and something about that quality that is prominent, so then that catches the attention and rasa starts. Right? It means the Stai Bhava will always be there. So there's always that element of rasa. But the dynamic element starts with the Vibhava. And so now the others will be discussed. Rati churns up the bhava that is latent in the chitta, heart, and consciousness. Of the sadhaka, the various emotions that manifest externally in response to this awakened bhava are called anubhava. Although the anubhavas, when externally expressed, seem to have a similarity to vibhava, vikara, the physical transformations caused by loving ecstasy. Right, so that would be your sattvika bhavas. Right? In truth, they are internal emotions in response to the bhava within the heart of the sadhaka. Right? So in other words, means that there's a mood in the heart, it causes an external manifestation. Right, but it's something that can be performed. Right, the sattvika bhavas means that the physical response is so great that basically there isn't so much necessarily functioning. Right, so that becomes the prominent element. You know, you can't chant. You're stunning. All these different things are there. Does that make sense? So that's just the general element of the rasa. The anubhava means the rasa has generated a particular emotion. That emotion has made a physical form. Right? So it's not about the physical form, it's about the emotion. The physical form just means you can tell what emotion it is. Does this make sense? You can tell what is the mood by what physically they're doing. So nritya, dancing, Vilungta, rolling on the ground. Gita, singing. Kroshana, lamenting loudly. Tanu Motana, stretching and yawning. Hunkara, making loud roaring sounds. Drimbana, yawning. Dhirga Shvasa, releasing sighs. Lokan Pekshita, being neglectful of people's reactions. Lalashrava, salivation. Atahasa, raucously laughing. Gurna, swooning, and hiccuping, are anubhava, external symptoms indicating the presence of bhava. So when it gives these ones, it's not and so forth. It means these are the ones. That's the so nice thing about the science. It's not just indicating something that they're given as an example. It can actually tell exactly which ones are happening. That's what you find as you get into the science of rasa. You can define it very, very exactly. Vrajanath, how can these physical transformations enhance the taste for rasa in sthayi bhava? Right, sthayi bhava means your fixed relationship. Relishing rasa is actually an inner experience, whereas the anubhava symptoms find expression externally. How then can they be considered as samagri bhava, ingredients of rasa? Right, so he's saying that rasa is an internal feeling, how you experience. So why would the manifestation externally, why would that be considered part of rasa? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Goswami, when the jiva's internal activities on the transcendental Shuddha Sattva plane stimulate and nourish bhava, a variety of vaichitriya, wonderful spiritual feelings, is spontaneously manifested. This transcendental variety infuses the heart with ineffable bliss in many different ways. Bliss causes vikara, physical transformations, which are exhibited as the ecstatic symptoms known as udbhavashvara. Udbhasvara. Excuse me. Okay. When the joy is effervescent in emotion, the devotee is seen dancing. When the heart hums with joy, the devotee sings aloud, and so on. These expressions of spiritual emotion further nourish rasa. Because you can see that. There's an emotion there. You can see the symptom. Then from there, that's something that you react with. Does that make sense? You'll react with that. So they're doing something. Let's say like the one. Yawning or, what's it? Lokapekshita, being neglectful of people's reactions, or tanumotana, stretching and yawning, means these ones, you know that something's, this is not yawning from being tired, right? It may be, that's another aspect, we'll see that later, but it means that someone's done something and you just go, you know, or just neglect, don't talk, you know, stretching, okay, you know, all it is, you're completely ignoring the other person, right? Does that make sense? So then that creates a reaction. Okay, now what are you going to do about that? How are you going to interact with that? Right? Or someone's going along and they're singing, oh, we were very happy today, aren't we? You know, something. You understand? It's the cause for further rasa. Does that make sense? So even though it's manifest externally, its manifestation externally gives you the indication of what's happening inside. Does that make sense? Right? So therefore, it stimulates further rasa. Does this make sense, or doesn't make sense at all? Let's say somebody is sad or crying. So what are you going to do? Okay, but by you seeing them crying, does that create that you are therefore interested to interact? Yes. So that's what anubhava is doing.
Is this in the material world or spiritual? Like, I mean,
it's in the spiritual world. This is real rasa. Its reflection is here. The mechanics work here. But the point is there it's about creating things for Krishna. Here it's about creating something for yourself. That's why it's called a perverted reflection. It looks the same, but it's perverted.
But what you're talking about now is
this... This is the spiritual. It's whatever we're talking about, you know, basically from now probably to the end of the book, is spiritual, right?
If it's manifested in the material world, I'm yawning. So nobody sees me yawning. So how does that...
So does that mean you're not yawning? If you don't see him yawning, does that mean he actually never yawned?
So you were talking about...
So if someone else is there, then it's there. But the point is you would yawn because of that, just like sighing. You might sigh because you're thinking of this and that and so many different things like that. You know, it's like, you know, the mortgage is due and then the rent and it's the festival and the prices are going up. And then, you know, the kid's sick and then there's this and then there's the visa thing. And you just sigh, you know, it's like that. But even if no one's there, it's still a manifestation of the same thing. It's just the point is these things go on for the interaction. Right? In the spiritual world, somebody's always around. So. Does that make sense?
So the yawning increases the ecstasy.
It increases the rasa. It's not, it means you don't look at it increases your ecstasy, it's increasing Krishna's ecstasy, because it gives opportunity for interaction. Because it's just like you want to know, okay, someone's thinking something, you want to know what they think, but by Anubhava you can tell what they're thinking, what the mood is, right? And then by judging the situation, then you look at it from, okay, so in this situation that kind of mood must be coming from this. Right? You know, someone's sad, so then you would think, okay, well, what's the situation? You've heard some rumors, or the situation is there where they're sitting, then something's wrong. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so the queen is sad, so but she's sitting in the normal place when the king comes in. So that means it's something light. But if he comes in and she's not there, and he asks the maidservants, where is she? And she's in the grieving chamber, that means it's something very serious. You know, so then you can tell what's there by and the situation. Then you can put it all together. And depending on the situation, you can respond. You know, and interact. Because then if they're in more of a private, then they can deal in one way. If they're in public, then it's a totally different way. So it's these cause all the different varieties of rasa. Does that make sense?
Okay. So going back to the example, I'm yawning, sitting on my room yawning in ecstasy. How does that increase Krishna's pleasure? Because
you're yawning in connection with Krishna.
Because he understands the emotion.
No, because you're absorbed in Krishna, and that particular mood causes yawning. Does that make sense? You know, so you're around other devotees, so therefore there's going to be discussions or some interactions based on Krishna, or Krishna's personally present, then he will be interacting. Is that? Yeah?
So it's ultimately what the mood is that's really interacting with Krishna, right? External manifestation.
The point is how do you know? You're sitting there going on and you're, you know, just blissfulness, you know, you came back, you did this, you did that. And then you're talking to your wife and she's interacting and suddenly you notice she goes silent. So if it wasn't for the silence, you wouldn't know something's changed in the mood. That's anubhava. You can tell something went wrong. Okay, then you go back, what did I say? Or what did I do? Right, so you look down at your plate, you know, you look something, you know, I'm saying so. You either made a mess out of something very nice, or, and then you notice, oh, I said something stupid because I was in such a mood. I started talking like I do to the other men. You know, something was there. You know that you just weren't aware of. So then you can tell by the anubhava what is the mood. So the anubhava is to give a symptom, because the whole point is. The female mood is constantly changing. So the point is though, but the interaction of that, it's dependent on the masculine making that step. They have to make the step. That's the whole dynamic. So how does he know what step to make unless there is a mood? There's some symptom so you can tell what mood it is. Because the feminine mood can change from one moment to the next. It can go through all these unlimited feelings. Right? So that will get into the Sanchari Bhavas. Right? But here the Anubhavas are these major manifestations so you can tell what the category is. Right? Because each one is there. Then Krishna can tell how to work. Now, amongst females, it's also the same thing. Because it's unlimited feelings, but they can relate to it directly. It means they feel the feelings like that. But they just want to know which one it is so that they can commune with that. But with Krishna, because of the masculine, it doesn't have that connection. So therefore, it's something different. So you have to figure it out. So for the girls, it's just, oh, it's that. And for Krishna, it's, oh, okay, it's in that area. And then he has to go farther and try to work and try to... But the girls, it's just once they figure it out, if they mention anything that the girl knows that that's what you're talking about, immediately they're interacting. Right? But with the boy, even he's figured it out, he still has to work out how to bridge the gap. Well, the girls don't. It's automatic. Right? Means if by the symptoms they haven't gotten it, then the other girl might get upset that this girl's really thick today. You know, something's wrong. You know, so that must mean she's worried about something or thinking about something. Otherwise, why can't she tell? Because girls are like that. As soon as one movement is there, everybody else can catch that. You ever notice, like, when they dance? All the girls are there. There's 50 girls there. And the one in the front goes like that. And within a nanosecond, the whole group has done that. Right? But if it's men, you could do that all day and nothing would change. You know? In fact, you say, okay, let's get in line and all that. And somebody's still doing that. You have to go up and grab him and put him there. You don't see girls grabbing each other to get him to do anything. But the guys, you have to grab him, put him in a circle, do this, yeah, make lines. Like that. That's the difference. So girls are tuned in. So the Anubhava for them is just, oh, that's what it is. It's just that much. But for the boys, oh, that, okay, now what do I say? What's the thing? Because it's the interaction. So he's making that endeavor, and then they respond to that. So that's why, that's the whole point of the rasa. So they're tasting the whatever rasa they're tasting in connection with Krishna, the other girls can then tune into and move with that rasa. Because there's a hierarchy of the girls. So whoever's on the top of the pile, right, they're the one that sets the mood. Everybody else moves with that. Right? That's why you have to have a hierarchy. And if you have girls that can't get along, because it hasn't been established who's higher. Or one thinks they're higher and the other one doesn't agree. Right? Or they may be higher, but they don't want to actually interact with their mood. They don't like their mood. You know, there's something like that. Therefore, there's that difference. You know, but you don't, that doesn't work with the men. So the whole point is the men have to bridge that gap. It's that endeavor that's what's making it of value. Otherwise, why would they do that? The girl's of value because you are trying to make that step, right? They are opulence, right? So opulence means when we say something is of value, we mean it is some variety of opulence. So girls are of value when the boy makes that endeavor. He makes that step. Does that make sense? So it's a whole science, you know. That means nectar devotion. We read the first part. The last three is all about this. Because it's such a refined science. It takes so much to explain it. But it's the one area that basically nobody worries about. I mean, girls worry about it. They can't articulate this, but as soon as you read all this, it'll make some sense. You know, just have to put it in the perspective. But for the boys, it's many times this is a whole like new area of like, you know, rocket science. Like that. Does that make sense? When the heart is effervescent with the emotion, right, that's the emotion. The devotee is seen dancing, that's the physical response. When his heart hums with joy, right, does that make sense? The effervescence means it's bubbling, so that means creates dancing. When it's just humming, you know, it's just, oh, this is good. Then it creates singing, right, aloud and so on. So each one creates a thing. These expressions of spiritual emotion further nourish rasa. Because those come up, then the other person can respond. So the whole idea of rasa, what causes interaction? Is that the exhibition of these ecstatic symptoms is not the main cause of ecstatic emotion. Right? They're just symptoms. They're just something that you can know from. Which is actually vibhava. Right? Because the vibhava is... What do you use the word here? It's not the main cause. Right, these are just symptoms that further. The main cause is Krishna's qualities and the particular situation or what's manifest now of that quality of Krishna, right, or of the devotee. That's the main cause of the bhava going on, right? But these are additional things that add to it. Does that make sense? You know, like you have something and there, and it's nice like that, but you have some extra things, you know, some garnishing, some extra like sauce or some other chutney or some other thing that you can combine with it. It adds. But just to eat it on its own, it's not something too special. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? You know, you can take the tahini and stick that on your, you know, falafel. But, you know, but just to eat the tahini straight is not actually that great. Does that make sense? you know, or if you're into miso, you know, you stick that in there. Soy sauce, you don't sit there and, you know, swill soy sauce, right? If somebody's sitting at the table and they've already downed, you know, a few glasses of soy sauce, you know something's wrong. They're not here to, you know, there's something else going on. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Kind of? Yes. But Anubhava is the follower and experienced as the supporter of Vibhava. Therefore, it's Anubhava, means Anu, the lesser. Right? It's the smaller. So it's following. It's the supporter of Vibhava. Because, in other words, the Vibhava came up, that created the emotion. From that, then there's those symptoms of what emotion is there created from Vibhava. But you know what emotion it is, because the emotions are so many, and so whichever one comes up, that's where you continue from. Bhava's going on, the emotion's going on, but you know which one is being manifest at the present moment, right? But it's always based on the sthayi bhava. So you know it's Mother Jashoda's always going to be acting in parental ras, right? The coward boys are always going to be acting in friendship ras. So it's not going to change. That won't change. Right? When Anubhava is churned up in the heart by Vibhava, splendid symptoms are displayed in the body. Thus, when the heart is flushed with Vibhava and Staibhava, a second function is initiated within the heart in the form of Anubhava, which then acts to further nourish this bhava. Right? Because nourishing means how to make it continue. It's not just the feeling of it, it's the interaction. Right? Because sambandha means what the relationship is. So Staibhava is the relationship. Right? Vibhava is the actual situation. Right? Does that make sense? Then, but the point is it's the interaction that's important, right? Because your sambandha is your feelings, right? The prayojana is that kind of like the need, right? That love. But how is that expressed? It's expressed through interaction. That's the abhideya. Does that make sense? You have a situation, you have a goal. But the point is how is that tasted? It's through the endeavor. Does this make sense? The abhideya is the central aspect, right? To act, of course, you have to know the field, have the proper knowledge, know your goal, all those things. But the point is the central feature is acting, endeavoring, right? You've actually endeavored. You've made the move. You're doing something, right? So, therefore, that's why it's saying is when these are together, this further enhances this, because by the bodily symptom, you know what the mood is. So, therefore, then the interaction can continue or start or whatever it is. It's from one mood to the next, you're able to deal. It's something that connects them. Yes?
So, can we say
sthayi bhava means fixed? Sthayi means fixed. Sthayi means what is the fixed bhava. That means of the five rasas, those are the staibhava. Does that make sense? So these are the samagri. Means that's the fixed rasa. That's the rasa you have with Krishna. But now to taste that rasa, then these samagri, or these samagri means the ingredients. Right? So the ingredients of rasa, then they come into play, and that actually brings out that taste. Because you have that relationship, but something has to be there to make it come up, right? And the mother's sitting there, let's say, in the kitchen doing something. And so she has that relationship with the child, right? But it's not like it's dynamically manifesting. It's just there in its static state, right? But the kid comes running into the kitchen. So what's that going to do? That's the Vibhava. To cause something, right? So the child is happy. So then the mother becomes happy and you see those symptoms. So you know they're happy by the Anubhava. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so the kid is there and either something happened and so they want to share it. You know, so what happened, that's the Vibhava that started it. Or they were going by, they heard there's some sound in the kitchen, so they go, there's something that causes that. And that causes happy. Or let's say that something happened to the kid. The kid fell over and hurt themselves. So they come running into the kitchen, but they're crying. Right? So then you can tell what's the symptom there. And so then that creates a mood in you. And so that's how you interact. But it's based on the Stai Bhava and what started it. So for the child that was getting hurt, that was the Vibhava. Right? Means that, and then think the mother, therefore I got hurt, the mother's the one who takes care, you know, and makes me feel better when I'm hurt. And then the mother, then that's the child running in and wanting that kind of attention is the Vibhava for her. But on both of them, it's the Anubhava that you see the interaction. Right? So she it means he comes in and he's feeling bad. So therefore then the natural response is that she'll also feel that, and then he feels good because it means her mood has caused his mood. Her mood is then makes him feel better. Now let's say she's on the phone, right? She's working out her, you know, arrangements, what time she's going to meet her, you know, friends at the spa. So then she might ignore the kid. Right, so that creates another mood. So he comes in, and then the Anubhava is she's ignoring. Right, so then he works off of that, and now he gets upset. So then he goes out and goes to his room. Right, and then the mother just finishes that, and then goes, "Oh, hey, what was it?" You know, and then he's not there. So because of that, that's the Anubhava. Then she goes looking for him. Does that make sense? Do we see how the Anubhava... But all it is it's indicating what moods are there. But it's based on the Stai Bhava. You know, so that's parental Ras. So that's the stable thing. And there's been something that starts the whole thing. Right? But it's based off that whole area. So therefore, the Alambana aspect of Vibhava is, okay, the mother is there, she's comforting, she's nourishing, she's supportive... You know, like this. So that's the Alambana for the child. So when he gets that, that's what inspires him. He keeps going. He does. That's not there. That's why he gets upset. Does that make sense? For the child, you know, their cuteness, that dependency like that, you know, that energy that's there, you know, that they share and everything and like that. That's the Alambana for the mother. But of that, something has come up. So the Uddipan will be that he got hurt, so now he thinks of that caring of the mother, right? And then the mother is, you know, that dependency of the child. So that's the Uddipan for the mother and the child, right? Based on the general category, the Alambana, that each has for towards each other. That's based on the Stai Bhav, which is their base mood of the parental rasa. Does this make sense?
What's the difference between Uddipan and Vibhav?
Uddipan and Vibhav. Uddipan is one of the parts of Vibhav. Vibhav has two parts, Alambana and Uddipan. Does that make sense? Alambana is the qualities of attraction, and Uddipan is the particular quality that you become attracted to, either by seeing it or something reminds you of it or anything. So that's what I said. The Lord himself, how he's behaving, paraphernalia of the Lord, the devotees, the Dham, Tulsi, anything that is connected with the Lord is Uddipan for remembering Krishna. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
What is the necessity of understanding the science? So I don't become a sahajiya, so I do Raghunuga Bhakti? Or so when I'm experiencing ecstasy, I know how to deal with it? Or something else?
What are you going to do in the spiritual world? This is what they do.
What had just happened? Do I need to,
Let us put it this way. If you don't know what you're doing, does it just happen between husband and wife? What does she spend all her time doing? She's training the husband how to respond. She doesn't know the science by the science. She can't necessarily explain it. Unless it's been explained to her, she's thought about it. But she feels the science. So she knows you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. So she uses all these various techniques to try to get the husband to understand. That's the whole point. That's why Krishna is Purusha. That's why all the gopis spontaneously hang around him. Because he does understand this science. And that's why in the material world, the women aren't so much into the men as much as they would like to be, because the men don't understand and they think, what's the point? Yeah, you understand? But now let's say we start a conversation is how important is it to understand, let's say, how well the distributor is balanced so the spark plugs are all sparking at the same right time and that the camshaft is also in line so that all the valves are moving and the crankshaft and the piston is all in line. How important is that for the car running?
Right.
Okay, now can the women understand that science? In general, no. But the men are, hey, you know, without that, how life doesn't go on. So that's in the physical world. That's in the physical world. That the cause and effect of what you see, I do something with something mechanical and that. But the women work in the emotional world. So the whole point is if you want to interact with women, you have to learn that emotional world. If you don't, it won't work well. It's not a matter of, you know, stop being trippy. No, that's like, you know, it doesn't work like that. That is men simply not understanding what they're dealing with. And actually, if you get right down to it, it's their escape mechanism for not wanting to do with something that to them seems like it's impossible to deal with. Right? Because what's the state? The man, she always wants the impossible. Right? But that's the nature. You know what I'm saying? Kings. Women, children, madmen, and people with a lot of money. These five always want the impossible. That's Chanakya. No, actually, that's Hitu Pradesh. But Chanakya, I think, uses it also. But that's Niti.
Kings, children, women, madmen, and...
Rich, it's nouveau, like the nouveau riche. People proud of their money. If they have money and they're not proud of it, they don't try for the impossible. So that means if you have women or kids, be prepared that they're going to ask, so say, why are they always... No, that's the nature. Why is this water always wet? Why can't it be dry for some time? You know? You know what I'm saying? Why is the fire always hot? You know? Why do I always burn myself? No, you have to learn not to burn yourself. It's not up to the fire. So we're thinking, no, it's up to the women and kids to get it together. No, it's up to the man to get it together. And this is the real symptom of being a man. Because that's what Krishna does. That's why all the girls like him. It's that simple. You know? We take it by it's how he wears his dhoti or this, or if I wear my dhoti like that. So that's nice. The girls like it. You've made an endeavor to try to look good. So they appreciate that. But that for them is just a situation. Now how you interact, that's more important. You know what I'm saying? It's not these the externals, like here, the Anubhava is only to support the rasa. But it's not the main element of rasa itself. That's why it's Anubhava.
Does it differ in different relationships? Like with the coward voice, boy to boy?
I mean, it's like man to man is then it's less because they worry more about, they focus on the mechanics. They're not as much on the emotion. It means the what they get from the mechanics, just in other words, the joy they get from operating the mechanics is their pleasure. But for the girl, it's not the operation of the mechanics, it's the experience gained from it. Right? So in the tradition, then the man involves himself more in the mechanics. Right? And then the women experience that, as long as the man is then sensitive to their experiencing of it. And is, you know, he does the activity, that sparks in her an emotion, then he runs with that emotion. But if he doesn't, he just works on the mechanics, then it's like, which is easier to do? Dress yourself or someone else helping you who doesn't actually know what they're doing? Therefore, women's liberation. It's that simple. Women's liberation is, I'll do it myself because the men doing it, it just complicates it. It's so much easier to just get my own Harley and drive it down the road. You know, it's just so much easier. You know, because the guys, they just get into the motorcycle and forget the girls on the back. You know? So the girl driving the Harley, she will not forget she's on the Harley. It's that simple. It's nothing to do with equality in that. That's just a clever way of presenting it to just get what you want. It's that because this science is becoming less and less and less valued and understood, therefore the women just do it themselves. While we look back in time, then you had what was considered more romantic time. Romantic men, the men appreciated these things. They had all the qualities. They had the sense control. They had the sensitivity. So it was all about the girl. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so and it's not, and they don't have a problem with being submissive, right? The girl's sick, right? The boy cares. So, and then there's another lady taking care of the girl. He says, "What can I do?" He doesn't walk in, "Okay, I'm here." No, he says to the situation, "What can I do? You know, give me something to do." He wants to be part of it. You know, he goes to the effort to speak nicely, to choose his words nicely, rather than "I'm just being me, and however I am, that's how they have to accept." That's why they don't accept. You understand? It's just like that. Because the point is say what you like, but if a young boy is being all about himself with attitude on his own, the women just ignore him. He can do whatever he wants, and the whole group, they'll just all ignore him. Because that's not how you do it. If he needs something, means, you know, he actually needs, he hurts himself, or he's happy, or something like that, then they'll interact. But as soon as he needs, like the guy comes home from the office or whatever, and it's been a rough day, and he thinks, you know, I really need some sympathy here. As soon as you walk in the door, the women understand that, and they just ignore you. They got something else in mind, just really trivial stuff. They won't even talk about their own day and their own feelings. It's just, they'll just talk about, "Oh, this and that. And didn't I tell you to fix this?" And, you know, how can it just that? Why? Because he thinks I am the center of attention. And a relationship with a woman never works like that. She has to be the center. It's just how rasa works. And it's just the way it is. It's not about, "Well, it shouldn't be like that," or "We're devotees." It's just, this is the way it is. Your arm bends this way. It's not, "I'm a devotee, it should bend the other way." You know, like that, you know. It's just, that's the way it works. You got five fingers, you know, like that. They bend in, they don't bend out. You know, it's just, that's the way it's made. So if the men are good at mechanics, you can look at it as mechanics. But the point is you don't make the endeavor to deal in the mechanics of the women's world, then where's the interaction? Where's the basis? So that's why, for us, it's just important to know that that's what's there. Like that. And if you're clever, then you can see that that's what's going on here. Though here it's self-centered. Right? The wife's doing all these things because of herself, and the man wants to work it out because of himself. Right? But the mechanics are exactly the same. But it's not because you can do mechanics here, that means you'll do the mechanics there. That's based on devotion. So you learn that from those who are there. They teach you how to deal in that rasa and all that, because we tend to mix rasas. You know, it's like, because in conjugal rasa you do also have friendship, that companionship. So sometimes the men fall into the mistake of friendship. You know, friendship's just generic. So therefore, friendship with the boys, I can use the same techniques on friendship with the wife. But it doesn't work like that. You know, so you ever seen it? You know, it's like in fashion. The men have their army boots. The women have their army boots. But you ever notice the difference? You know, there's some refinement there. You know, they have exactly the same thing. So even if something from the man's world goes into the woman's world, it goes in a finer state. Like the woman has a suit, but it's not like a man's suit. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, in the 20s, you have short hair, you know, really grease it down like that, you know, and you drive a Harley. Then it works. But otherwise, the women wear a women's suit. Does that make sense?
So Where did this science? Where is it first found?
It means Lord Chaitanya, it means it's there in the spiritual world. That's what they go on with. But that's what nectar devotion is about. Nectar is the science of rasa.
So Rupa Goswami is the first one?
For us, he is our rasacharya. So he is the acharya of this. So anybody who's speaking here, it's based on Rupa Goswami.
He got it from
Lord Chaitanya.
Or he got it from other sources as well?
No, he got it from Mahaprabhu. It means from what's here. But the point is he gets it from Radharani. Right. So Mahaprabhu is Radharani, so it's the same thing. So Rupa is Radharani's maidservant. Of all the maidservants, he's the main one. He's the head maidservant. Right? So therefore, he gets it directly from her.
So it would be like, I want to write a book about how to be a good husband, and my wife dictates, and I write it down.
That's
a good book.
That's the ideal. Like that, just so long as in the after you have the front page, right? You know, you open it, then the next page looks exactly like the front page without all the colors, right? Then the next page should say, you know, dedicated to my loving wife, this, that, blah. If it does like that, then it works. You know, and as long as when then you go out to the big seminars and do all the things, when you come home, tell her how great it is and without her support. And then all the things she felt you could do better in the seminar, she tells you, you do it next time. That's the way it works. You don't like it, hey, you know, do something else, you know, go to the forest, you know, like that, you know. That's the whole point. That's what the meaning of brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas is. You don't want to be involved in it. That's what those are for. Right? You know, and even vanaprastha, then that can be with the wife. These are reduced because these are only necessary because of the interaction with other women. When the wife comes to that point where she goes beyond the need for impressing other women, then you just get down to the sadhana. But it's something that has to come of its own. Right? The fruit ripens on the tree in its own time. You can't sit there and go, you know, yell at the tree and that, you know, how long are you going to, you know, this, that, it's not going to work. So it's natural. So that's all the things that are taken on when one enters into family life. It's a package. And there's nothing left out. Right? You know, includes the wrapping, the ribbons, you know, the whole thing. You know.
So the traditional training is gone. Someone becomes a devotee, becomes a brahmachari, and then you try to keep him a brahmachari. So when he finally gets married, he has no idea.
No, but they're trying to keep him a brahmachari, but it didn't work. But if you actually train them in these things, then you know, okay, this is exactly what I'm getting into. So now it's either, now I know what it is, so I'm comfortable getting into it, or now I know and I don't need that. So real, it means, it's just like this. It means, I don't know if you've heard this one before, but if you want to have some fun, is if you had, let's say you had a temple, and you have all the brahmacharis, right? And there's all the ladies. Simply, if you want to know who's a brahmachari, go to the ladies, tell them, make a list of who's brahmacharis, who's not. And they'll get it nailed on the head. They know exactly who's a brahmachari, who's not. They'll deal with them because they're dressed like a brahmachari, but they know who is and who's not. And the fun part is the ones that actually are the brahmacharis are the ones that don't mind, you know, serving prasad to them. Or, you know, if they ask them a question, they will give them an answer. You know, and stuff like that. Those are the real brahmacharis, because they can deal with women, but they actually don't need that dealing. You know, just like a small child can interact with women, and they don't have that conjugal need. So that's why there's so much respect by ladies of small boys. When they hit the teenage, then if it's yours, then okay. But if it's below puberty, it doesn't matter who the kid is. Women have a respect for them. But when they hit puberty, then unless they behave right, then they don't have that respect. And if it's their own kid, then it's kind of like you know.
Yeah, I always thought that's how you could tell who should be sannyasi. You don't go to the GVC, you go to the women.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, based on one level, that's it would work. But then you also have to see, is that working in that world, is then you can't have those who have issues with the person. Because those will never go away. Because women don't forgive. You know, like Kshatriyas. You know, we mentioned before the kings and the women want the impossible. So like kings, women, it's very rare they forgive. So if something went wrong, they won't forgive. So if he's changed, so you have to deal with women who've dealt with him in the present. And if you have some that dealt from the past that have that, then you get a good idea. Okay. So in other words, by training people actually in what rasa is, how to deal, that's what you've done. It means we've seen it so many times. You have this group, generic group of brahmacharis, and they all kind of have that brahmachari move, you know. Yeah, yeah, we, you know, pieces of wood for breakfast. Yeah, you know, we're brahmacharis. We smell bad. Like that. We live in the back of the van, and even an animal wouldn't live with us. It's so bad. Yeah. Like that kind of a thing, you know? So, you know, it's fun, you know? You know, you put on your woad, you know, the blue color, and go out with your sword and stand there, you know, with the other guys on the other side and go, you know, it feels good, you know? It's like that, you know, it's a man's thing, you know? Like that. So that kind of a thing. But then you start with that, and you go through so many days of discussing what actually is grihastha like, what is masculine, what's feminine, all these things. You see the group just split into Naistika and Upakurvana. Naistika means one who never gets married. Upakurvana, who's committed to brahmacharya, but he'll get married later. Because what you want is not a brahmacharya. You're not trying to not get the brahmacharis married. You're trying to get the brahmacharis trained. And while they're training, they shouldn't be involved with women. Because otherwise, it takes too much attention. It takes all the attention. Right? So that's why the brahmacharis don't interact. It means it's basic service, but other emotionally, no. So then Upakurvana means that I know I'll get married in the future, but I want to train myself in brahmacharya so that I'm qualified. Because Prabhupada said first class brahmacharya makes first class grihastha. So therefore, he does all the things. But in the modern things, if you think that I'm going to get married, so then why you're being dishonest? Be real and get married today. That's just stupid. I mean, stupid's the only word I can think of. You know, I can't think of any more. And I would say that's euphemistic. It's just downright destructive. Because the point is without training, you know, it's just like to say, yeah, I want to be a fireman. So, okay, so, you know, what's all this training nonsense? Just get in there and, you know, be a man, you know? Hey, what do you mean? No one would agree with that. You know? So the point is brahmachari means that's where you're trained. Then, when you're trained as a brahmachari, a trained brahmachari becomes a naistika. Not that an untrained one's a naistika. He's not a naistika. Naistika is one who's trained and now is committed to being a brahmachari.
I don't see any training going on.
Hey.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Is Anubhava, is that external symptoms?
No, Anubhava is the mood that has these external symptoms. That's what it says at the bottom of the page. Does that make sense? When the heart is effervescent with emotion, that's the mood. The devotee is seen dancing, that's the external. So Anubhava is the external symptoms by which you can tell what the internal mood is. That's it. That's another topic that you have to speak to the big boys. Because Prabhupada's given this information, it's been there since 66. But people don't take it. Hey. Just like how much effort did Prabhupada put into cooking? How many people know how to cook? How many value it? Right? So Prabhupada himself would cook. His best men would cook. Kirtananda was a servant. He was the sannyasi. He was one of the GBC. One of the better cooks. Tamal Krishnamars, very important cooking. Bhavananda, all the original ones, you had to be good at it. It was good. I mean, in 70, 71, 72, if you couldn't cook a full Sunday feast yourself, you didn't get initiated. That was qualification. You know, that, giving a class, leading kirtan. If you couldn't do those three things, you didn't get it first initiation. So it was valued. So the point is it switched from these fine etiquettes and things of devotional life, the direct devotional activities and the etiquette that goes with it, that management will make everything work properly. So that becomes, because management means I can drop all the internal things and just work on the mechanics, which is what men can do easily. And we notice that the more the men go in that direction, the more the women go in the other direction. But at the same time, we use this nice language to make it sound like, oh, we're working for this. But they're not. Because if they're working for the women, then they would work in the environment that they could function in. Yes.
So you're talking about training for a man to enter the Grihastha ashram and exactly how to be successful in it.
Well, it's how to be successful in life, because everything works on the same principles. It's just a matter of whether you have to acknowledge the interactive emotional element of it or simply just the mechanical element of it. Does that make sense? Because machinery means you get symptoms. Okay, let's say you start the car up, right? And it makes this kind of like clanking sound. Clanking sound. So that's the anubhava for, you know, the tappets need, how you say?
Adjusting.
You know, and if it goes, it starts, it goes, it's out of like this, that means then the distributor's out. So the men are very expert at this. Just somehow or another, they have no idea they have to apply the same thing to people. They're like little kids, right? Little kids is, you go home, and it doesn't matter what you do, your mommy likes you. So somehow or another, that means, and that's the idea, that's the blueprint, all women have to be like that. So it doesn't matter what I do, my wife and daughter have to love me. No, only your mother will love you. Like that. It's just the way it works. But they make this mistake. That's why the boy doesn't get trained under the mother. They get trained in the guru.
So for a girl who's not in the home, what would the equivalent look like for her?
Means being trained by women who understand this. Like that. The point is the women train the girls, the men train the boys. But that means both of them, the women have to know the science, the men have to know the science. Because the point is the science is the common ground between them to interact in the social platform. You know what I'm saying? So if you run a girls' gurukul like a boys' gurukul, that means they're not dealing with girls. They're not girls, they're not dealing with girls. They may say we're not this body, but that's a joke. You know what I'm saying? It's just a trick. It's like saying, you know, we're devotees, so therefore the dog won't act like a dog. Dog always acts like a dog. Hanuman's a monkey. He acts like a monkey. Right? He's a devotee. So therefore he performs devotional service, but he jumps into trees and eats the fruit and, you know, breaks the branches and has a great time. You know what I'm saying? Have you ever heard of a king going into another king's garden and destroying the garden? No. Why would they do that? It means you defeat the king and it's your garden. Why would you destroy the garden? But now monkeys breaking gardens and trees, that's fun. So therefore, he's engaged that monkey propensity to break a garden for himself, for his own fun, to do it for Ramachandra. Because this is the garden he's keeping his wife in. So he's thinking this is a nice garden, and because of the romantic environment, it will make Sita more attracted to Ravana. So he's destroyed that garden for Ram. But he's done what monkeys do. So they're not changing. Bhima always does Bhima stuff. Yudhishthir always does Yudhishthir stuff. Does that make sense? So this idea that they'll change is not real. You know? Does that make sense? We're not saying not realistic, meaning it's possible. It's impossible. Krishna's question, when you have in the Shastra, you have two times it comes up. Kunti asks, and I think the four Kumaras ask, the Hamsa avatar. And Kunti asks Krishna. And then Krishna refers to this conversation. So that they ask, when will the mind be detached from the sense objects? And Hamsa Avatar's answer is, this is not a real question. You know, that's like saying, when will fire not be hot? Or water not be wet? The mind will always be in contact with the sense objects. The point is how it interprets that. Does it interpret the sense objects for me, or the sense objects for Krishna? That you can change. But that the mind won't interact with the sense objects, that's impossible. That's what it does. Does that make sense? So therefore, the conditioning that's there, you can't change that. That's the way it is. You can purify it, but you can't change it. Yes.
Do you see a danger in, it seems like for many devotees, they have a little knowledge, but they don't have the complete picture. Do you see that to be more dangerous than not having any knowledge?
It depends. If they're open to knowledge, then the whole idea is if you have a little bit of knowledge, then you can move it forward. If you don't have a little bit of, if you have that little bit and you think because that's that I have that, that's the first stage of anartha nivritti. You get a little bit of knowledge and you're puffed up, you think you know everything. Right? That's the first stage of how anarthas are dealt with. So here the anartha is ignorance, but the first stage is you think you know everything. You know, so one has to know more, but it has to be able to know it from the platform of rasa, not from the platform of how the men would like it to be. It has to be how it actually is. Because the point is if it was just supposed to be Atmarama, Krishna would have left it that way. But he expanded his energy to interact. So that means this is the reality. And we're feminine. So if Krishna doesn't interact in this way, then there is no interaction. There is no meaning of manifestation. So that we're here to interact means then this science must be followed. And if science isn't to be followed, then there'd be no manifestation. It'd just be Krishna's Atmarama. There would be no creation. And so we wouldn't be around to make the complaint.
Like that. Yeah. There's a question here about Rasa Padma,
say,
by Bhakti Rasamrita Sangita. Can you get that from the Bhakti
Rasamrita Sangita? Yeah, no, this is all from Bhakti Rasamrita. Just who reads it? But this is all from there. Prabhupada explains all these things. Just because there's question and answer here, then you can ask the question, where's the doubt? In other words, taking from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, then to bring out the problem that's there is that you read this and what you might not understand, then we have a devotee to ask the question, what about this? And then it can be explained. So that's the advantage of this. Now, when understanding this, when you read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you'll see it's as clear as day that this is what Rupa Goswami is talking about. Like that. So that's the whole point of it. Because that's the basis of our books is the philosophy, you know, your Gita, and the rasa, the nectar devotion. You understand these two, then you understand the philosophy, actually. The whole philosophy and culture. But the depth of it, we just take it, okay, I know, read Gita, know a few shlokas, so been there, done that. But the whole point of how to see Krishna and everything, how he's everywhere, how that all works, that's not gained. So now that practical application, because you use both of them at once, so those two combined, that's your Bhagavata. So that's why you need to, these are studied first. Then you can appreciate what goes on in Bhagavata. So that's why this is in the third year, so that all this is appreciated. Then we get into the Bhagavata. But this is in detail in your tenth canto. So that means you need the first nine cantos to actually see how the philosophy was applied in the culture, that people made themselves perfect and brought themselves to this platform. Then you can appreciate 10th canto. Otherwise, the tendency is we'll always bring it back into the material world. Like that. But the point is the nine cantos means we've done all this within the world and gone through the need to get married. Kardama Muni as a brahmachari. But he sees the need to get married. So how he goes through this, his mentality, approaching the Lord, the arrangement of the marriage, how he deals with his wife and family, you know, and the whole purpose is spiritual. As soon as that he's had that realization, his son has grown up, is taking responsibility, he's moving on. Right? So that's what you're seeing. Then the next is not Kardama, I mean it is Kapila and Devahuti. Right? Now, you're explaining Shankya, which is a very, very elaborate subject, right? You know, second canto, third canto, those parts of third canto, fifth canto, these are generally the parts that devotees love to ignore. Right? But now, third canto is being spoken to who? To Devahuti. Right? So that means the science can be understood by everyone. Right? And how it's presented means it can be. So that's the whole point. Otherwise, you could have him sitting down and talking to the great sages on Tapa Loka. But you don't hear about that. I mean, there's some reference to it in 10th canto, you know, at the end. It means Prayers of the Personified Vedas. Like that you get, because that's referring to a conversation that happened on Tapa Loka. 11th canto is working on that level. But one's already been introduced to that, so that means anybody can understand 11th canto. Does that make sense? So it means, in other words, the whole idea of the academy is to show that what Prabhupada's giving is complete. When he says everything's in his books, we're trying to show that. Because if you go back and now read Prabhupada's purports, you'll see all this. But it's just we're unable to get that. So we're looking at this other, the technical. It doesn't make it higher. It's just the technical explanations of that higher presentation. And how important this stuff is, because Prabhupada gave it. Otherwise, why did he bother writing all these things? Right? Why is it Nectar Devotion was one of the first books he translated? Like that. So therefore, it's important. And devotees, if they take this as important, then other things become much less important. Right? And then the preaching of this, the practice of this, the distribution of books, then that takes much more prominence. But otherwise, we think if I become perfect at material mechanics, not as presented in the Shastra, but as commonly popular, that will make everything okay. That's the mistake. So what has that got to do with reality? So that's what this study is for. It's way deeper. That's why, you know, it means in the 3 years, have anybody ever seen us and we expect you to have any verses memorized or some list of agree, like what are the 9 qualities of a Brahman? No, why not? Because those are things you should be doing yourself. You see, this is interesting. And so I can use this. But what we're trying to get is, what is the mood? What is the actual purpose of all these things? That's the real study. Does that make sense? That's why we're dealing with this. Is that? Okay. Okay. Thus, when the heart is fleshed with Vibhava and Staibhava, a second function is initiated within the heart in the form of Anubhava, which then acts to further nourish the Vibhava. Right? Because it nourishes those qualities. It means it may be nourishing the original thing that you're taking it from, or it may be from the Alambana of the other qualities that are all connected with it. Therefore, Anubhava really is a positive and independent Samagri Bhava, right? Because the doubt was, is it's a physical symptom. It means that's how you notice it. So wouldn't that just be part of the other bhavas, right? Because if it's the mood, then that's already there in Stai Bhava or in the Vibhava. Or if it's physical, that's already there in the Sattvika Bhavas or the Vikara that he's mentioned. So why would it be separate? No, because it's the emotional, the physical symptoms of the emotional state that is the next step in the interaction. So now you can take from that step to the next one after that. So he's saying, therefore, it's actually a positive and independent samagri. It's not just something on the side. It's positive because it moves the rasa forward. Right? Yeah. The ecstatic symptoms are divided into 2 divisions. Shita, cooling, and kshepana, propelling. Singings? Yeah, okay. Somehow I saw sing sing. And it says, singing. It's probably supposed to be singing, right? Without the S? Singing, yawning, and so on are called sita. Dancing and bodily contortions are called shepana. There are other anubhava symptoms, but they are extremely rare. For instance, utfulata, the entire body pulsating with excessive jubilation. Rakta udgama, exudation of blood. Nan astibhi, sandhi viyoga, or karshana, dislocation or compression of the joints, right? You'd see Lord Chaitanya would do those. So in this world, generally they don't, you know, it means within this body. So what they're explaining are things that you can relate to because they can go on within the body up to prema. Once you go beyond prema, then the Anubhava that's there will have all these, but these other ones can be added in. And because of that, these can only be done, experienced in a spiritual body. The material body can't actually function with that. Right? Does that make sense? If it was, then the rack would not have been so popular back in, you know, the Inquisition and stuff. Because it wouldn't have done anything, right? You stretch the guy out and like that, and then afterwards he stretch, you know, you untie him, he stretches back. You know, it would just, you know, it wouldn't have done anything. But so therefore, these ones aren't done. So that's why he's saying they're extremely rare. So that's what's special is Lord Chaitanya would manifest these. So we have to understand how great it is. That also, that's another part of the science. If you understand this, you can appreciate Chaitanya Charitamrita, what goes on there more. Like that. Because this is only the science. This is not getting into the tasting. That's in Chaitanya Charitamrita level. So that's, you know, 10, 11, and 12th year. Then that's like that. Okay. The extraordinary symptoms like Kumarakara taking the form of a tortoise as the result of a static emotion that our most beloved Sri Nimai Chaitanya exhibited are neither possible or applicable to sadhakas. Right? So therefore they're not explained so much. They're there, but they're not, it means, so he's mentioning them just so we may wonder, you know, what happening with Lord Chaitanya. But they don't apply to sadhakas. That's why they're not made prominent. The ones that are mentioned on the previous page, those ones are applicable to the sadhaka. Like that. And then the moods, those are cooling. And then those kind of things that are basically kind of more static or pleasant. And those that are physically active, then those are propelling. Srila Goswami. Srila Goswami. Oh, wow, he didn't even mention the name. What is Sattvika Vikar? Okay, so that's the next one. So here he mentioned it as Sattvika Bhava. Okay, so he's also saying Sattvika Vikar. Okay, does that make sense? So Sattvika Bhava or Sattvika Vikara or Vikara. That's all meaning the same thing. It means what are the bodily symptoms? Goswami, when the purified consciousness known as Chitta is under siege by any kind of bhava, either directly or indirectly, this state of the chitta is described as sattva. The range of emotions directly produced by the state of sattva is called sattvika bhava. They are of three kinds: snigdha, wet; digdha, moist; and ruksha, dry. Vrajanath, kindly explain these three sattvika bhavas. Goswami, snigdha sattvika bhava is divided into mukhya, principal, and gona, subsidiary. When the heart is flooded with mukhya rati, a direct mood of loving Krishna, mukhya snigdha sattvika bhava is expressed through stumbha, paralysis, sveta, perspiration, and other principal symptoms. Where rati is slightly indirect or obstructed, for instance when Krishna is at a distance, is called gauna rati, which produces gauna snigdha sattvika bhava. The two main symptoms being vaivarnya, pallor, and swarabhanga, aphasia, which causes emotions such as faltering of the voice. Right? In other words, when Krishna's there, means in the wet, when Krishna's personally, directly present, right, then you see these strong physical symptoms. But when he's at a distance, you know, either you can see from a distance or he's not there, then it creates these seemingly more negative. In other words, the one creates the positive, is in other words in sambhog, and the other is from separation, vipralamba. Right? So in other words, you have within the direct and indirect, which is, so indirect will be the not in connection, means in vipralamba, or separation from Krishna. Does that make sense? Well, the other ones will be directly in. If, besides mukhya and gona rati, other loving symptoms accost the heart, then lukewarm bhava of rati, digdha, which was moist. Sattvika bhava is manifest through kampa, shivering. Further, if an ostensibly devotional person who does not possess true rati is struck with joy and astonishment by hearing the wonderful qualities and pastimes of Krishna, which then leads to ananda, he experienced at ruksha bhava, dry emotions. Romancha, horripilation, is an exemplar. Right? It means the standing of the hair on the body, because it's not wet. Right? It's controlled. So in other words, it's wet if it's that's primary symptom. Nothing else is bothering it. So therefore it'll manifest to such a strong degree. Then if there's that and some other transcendental emotions, then it will be moist, right? Like shivering and stuff like that. So it's there, but it's not as strong. It doesn't create paralysis like that. And then when it's even less like that, one is not on that platform, but one feels something from it, right? In other words, the element of bhava comes up, but one's not actually situated on the platform of bhava. One's on a lower level of bhava. Then it gives all kinds of symptoms that create happiness in that, sustain the hairs on end and other things. The symptoms are very mild, right? So therefore it's called dry, because it doesn't actually have that love. Yes. Abstentionally devotional means predominantly devotional. So you would get that would be more of a commonplace, let's say, in someone in a Madhyama, and especially the more advanced, Ruchi, Asakti, then you'd see it more, right? But it doesn't mean, because bhava is the principle that's functioning all throughout, it doesn't mean that the neophyte also, that wouldn't happen, but it probably would be much less often, you know, or much less intense. Is that what you're saying? Yes.
Is there any problem in a very young devotee exhibiting dry symptoms?
No, it's just because it means the point is between the point when they drop that the material, it means when they drop the idea the material world has anything of value. So it's kind of like a clean slate. And before they've kind of like become comfortable within the world of, you know, how you say, devotee politics, right? You know, in that gap, there's nothing much to disturb the mind. So then if they become involved in, you know, with pure devotees, the chanting and hearing about Krishna and all that, you might see these symptoms. It's not a problem.
Well, how does one know it's not just material?
But what is it connection to? What's the reason for it? Because we're looking.
Polluted consciousness mixed with something.
But it doesn't matter. The point is what's actually causing it is the devotional. There's something material. It just means it's mixed. So that's why saying already dry means it's not full, because full would be wet. So when we're talking about the symptoms that the devotees are, the ecstasies that the devotees in Lord Chaitanya's and in Krishna's pastimes are manifesting, basically we're talking about wet. Sometimes it's moist because there's other things happening. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, let's say, that ecstatic emotion comes up in the gopis, but they're in Mother Jashoda's house. So it got two emotions mixed at once, so it'll be moist. It can't manifest fully as wet. But Mother Jashoda, because it's her house, it's wet. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is dry means it's within the sadhaka range. But the point is it's bhava, so that something comes up, nice. The problem is devotees get into trying to enjoy that. That's where the problem comes. Because then it's, oh, I had that, and so because of that, therefore I'm special, I'm more advanced, or trying to recreate that again, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. The point is it happened, now move on. You know, the point is if that's good, then that should give faith that by chanting the holy name and the association of devotees, nice things happen. But because we take it as a trip, something mystical, oh, that happened to me, you know, and stuff like that. It's like, you know, get over yourself, you know, like that. That's just supposed to happen. So, yeah, so I was in the kirtan and I felt all my hair set. Yeah, so that's supposed to happen. That's why Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami is saying, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, it's not happening. So it's like an ironclad stone heart. Like a stone, you can hit it and break it. You know, an iron, you can crush it. You know, I mean, you can dent it. But if you have a stone heart that's clad in iron, you can't really do anything to it. So that's his point, is that I have that because I'm not manifesting these wet symptoms. So it's like, you know, what's the problem? It's like saying, well, this prasad tastes so nice, you know? Of course, it's supposed to taste nice, you know? It's like, you know what I'm saying? So devotees get into, try to throw it into this mystical, and that mystical is something, you know, special, and get that bhava and all that stuff like that. You know, that's why they have all these magazines, you know, for stuff like that. You know? And, you know, I mean, traditionally people would read UFO or 40 in Times or, you know, these other kind of magazines for getting that kind of community. You know, I heard something. You know, like that. You know, that's, you know, that's why they make Ouija boards. You know, all that stuff is all there for us. You know, but the point is that we're devotees, so we don't get off on this. Now we're into reality. So, yes, it's supposed to happen. So if it does happen, great. But it's not happening right now, so what are you doing about it? What are you doing to purify the heart, and, you know, be in good situation, and be committed to trying to develop love for Krishna? What are you doing for that? Not living in the past, right? That's why it's annoying, because they're living in the past. It's got motive ignorance mixed with a devotional experience, rather than what's happening in present, which is the motive ignorance. Okay, what are you doing right now? Oh, no, they're trying to relive that moment. But the moment's gone. Krishna is still there, so that's why you have to, and Krishna's in the present. So if you want to actually taste it, you have to be in the present. Because Krishna's not in the past. Does that make sense? So that's the problem. So that's the point, is if one understands these things, one knows where to draw the line. Because these people, oh no, that's nonsense. Oh my, no, but I really felt it. No, this is, you know, this is sahajya. And then there, it means the one side's not going to get involved. Oh, that guy's, you know, right off. And the other guy's going, they don't understand. But you just tell them, yeah, so now what? You've completely just blown their whole world of sitting there like that. And so what are they left with? Okay, yeah, got to get real. And so if they're actually sincere, they'll get real. If they're not, then they'll, oh, he's, you know, trying to get, he's bad vibes, you know, just so they can go into their mode of ignorance, you know, like that. That makes sense? Yeah. Okay. Rajana, how are the sattvika bhavas produced? Goswami, when the chitta of the sadhaka, who is immersed in sattvika bhava, pure spiritual motion, is united with the prana, the bodily life energy, then the prana is placed in an abnormal condition, which causes perturbations in the external body. As a result, symptoms like paralysis, perspiration are manifested. Okay, so we get the difference here? So that means that emotion is so strong that it affects when it affects the life energy, the prana. Then it causes all these. Right? So now the other one is simply the emotional state causes it. It's just the natural, when this emotion is there, physically you do this. You know, it's like you walk in the room, they're doing something. What are you guys up? Oh, nothing. You know? Well, why does that? It always says, why the hands always go up? You know? Like that, you know, because it's supposed to be caught you, hands up, okay. Like that, because, you know, this is like, no, nothing, no, we're not doing anything. Like that, you sure? No, yes. It's like, you know, and everyone goes off in different directions. You know, it's like, you know, yeah. So those are just the manifestations. It's not the life airs. This is just, of course, life airs are moving the body, but what they're saying is the life airs are not in their normal position. They're becoming abnormal. Therefore, it creates these symptoms that we would normally call perturbations, right? They'd be a disturbance, right? But they're not a disturbance because they're actually ecstasy, right? But it's part of what goes on, right? So that's why these symptoms are the ones, when they talk about the ecstasy is so much that it gets in the way of the service, they're talking about these ones. So these are the ones they'll try to control. The other ones they're not trying to control unless it's part of the rasa, so that they don't know what you're doing. Right? Okay. Rajanath, how many types of sattvika vikar, ecstatic transformations, are there? Goswami, there are 8 sattvika vikara. Stamba, paralysis. Sveda, perspiration. Romancha, horripilation. Svara Beda, faltering of the voice. Vipatu, or Kampa, shivering. Vaivarnya, pallor. Ashru, tears. Pralaya, devastation, or unconsciousness, right? So here, this Kampa shivering, we can see is here, the herpilation. You also find that in the Anubhava. But the thing is here, it's the only prominent thing that's happening. Right? It just completely overwhelms the body because the life airs have become abnormal. So it's much stronger than you would find it in the Anubhava. The Anubhava, it'll be light, so it'll just be that effect of the emotion. One will be able to continue on normally. But in these Sattvika Vikar, then its effect is much stronger, so it actually affects the physical, involvement. Does that make sense? Yes.
What's the mechanics for pure spirits emotion becoming
not? What's the mechanics of them? It's just because the mind is what controls the senses. So the mind pushes on the life airs, which pushes on the physical body.
Yeah.
That means you move your arm. So the muscle moves the arm. Right? The muscle is pushed by the fire. Right? And then the prana is pushing the fire. The mind is pushing the prana.
And how does the pure spiritual emotion push the mind?
They have the pure spiritual mind.
Okay.
It means here you're using it through the material facilities. That's why the manifestations are not necessarily as strong as they are in the spiritual world. That's why it mentions some of them just aren't happening there. Or if you're working with the material mind, then the symptoms that manifest in the sadhaka stage are dry. Right? What is they? Rukshu. Ruksha. It means it's purified, but not enough that you're on the stage of bhava. When you're on the stage of bhava, then you're dealing with the spiritual mind.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why he's saying impure spiritual mind, because then you're acting on that level. So when it's not pure spiritual emotion, means it may be pure spiritual emotion mixed with something else. Because bhakti, there's only bhakti. So we say mixed bhakti, it's not like it's a different grade of bhakti. It's the same bhakti mixed with something else. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like, say I have lemon, and squeeze the lemon. So that's pure lemon juice. I put some water, it's still the full lemon juice, but with water in it.
Yeah.
It's not that it's a different kind of lemon juice. So bhakti is still bhakti. It's just that it's become mixed with the material. So that's why then any symptoms that do manifest are ruksha, they're dry. Right? But compared to anything you've ever experienced in the material world, they're way beyond that. So that's the idea, is if that's so good, and this is just a touch of the dry symptoms, imagine what the natural symptoms are. How great that is. Right? Yeah. But it's aparoksha, as Madhvacharya was saying. So as soon as you focus on it, you don't have it. If you're just experiencing it, then it's there. So you can be in that rasa. But you're conscious of it. So it's not like the flow of consciousness like the Buddhists are talking about. Because otherwise, where does that flow come from? Because if there's only void, where did this flow of consciousness come from that you're just happening to tap into? So there's this whole flow and everyone's tapping into it in their own way, so therefore all the different individuality, but as soon as you pull yourself out of it, unplug yourself, then you merge into the void. You know, how would that work? You know, where did that come from if there's only void? So it doesn't, it's not. What we're talking about is that this flow of consciousness, in other words, the flow of it's Krishna's feelings and the feelings of the devotees, that interaction, then we're plugging into that. So you're able to appreciate it, but you're not focused on it. You're not going, wow, this ecstasy is great, isn't it? You know, like that. So then it's different, right? It means, in other words, it's what you're experiencing. You're aware of it, but you're not focused on it. So that's why it's aparoksha. That's where you're saying meditation. You're aware of the Lord. I'm meditating on the Lord, and I'm getting a peacefulness from that meditation. That's why it splits those two. Because the one is you're thinking of the Lord through a sadhana. The other is you're naturally experiencing. Right? Does that make sense?
Does the controller and enjoyer mood, then block that?
Yeah, controller and enjoyer always blocks it.
So like,
because if you're controlling it, you're aware of it. And you're enjoying it, you're aware of it.
Yeah.
But if you're not aware, you're just like, let's say you went to a party. And at the time, you went through the whole party. And then afterwards, someone says, how was the party? And you'll say, party was great. But at the time, you never thought the party is great. You're just experiencing the party. Does that make sense? That's aparoksha. You understand?
So like this kirtan's great?
Yeah, when you're talking about, it's not that it's finished, it's that moment you're not experiencing where you go, wow, this is a, you know, throw your, hey, this is a great kirtan, yeah, you know, like that. You're not experiencing the kirtan. Now it's gone into the past. Because Krishna's in the present, but you're thinking in the past. Because the moment you're sharing is in the past. You know what I'm saying? So, but you're talking about it, but it's about Krishna, so it's in the present. But now it's not aparoksha, it's paroksha. It drops to the level below that, where now you're sharing and hearing from each other. Does that make sense? It's just a different level of experience. Yeah.
So, when you're chanting and you're focusing on Krishna, serving the holy name, and you can prolong that before your mind steps in and attracts you somewhere else, is that practice directly going to help you with these, if you start experiencing these symptoms, to meditate on experiencing symptoms rather than?
No, because you don't meditate on experiencing the system, you meditate on serving, because the experiences come from the service. So if you focus on the experience itself, then you've disconnected the service and the experience coming from that service. Because those go together, then as I'm experiencing that. You understand? As soon as you think this is great, then you're not doing the thing that generates it.
Yeah, sorry, I asked the question.
You know, it's just like, let's say I'm putting something in my mouth and I'm tasting it, right? And as soon as it's done, I put something else in my mouth. So I'm just tasting. If I stop and go, wow, this is really great, am I tasting it? No, because you've stopped the process.
What I meant was the practice during chanting japa. Will
that help with being able to experience that without saying, oh, wow, this is great? Japa is the process. It's also when one gets to the platform of prema, it's the goal. I mean, it's the process, it's the goal, it's everything. So the point is being engaged in devotional service, that's your process. So anything that you're doing in devotional service, that you're doing it thinking how to please Krishna, that's what you want to be doing. All of that nourishes. Does that make sense? So it's not. So japa is one of the ways, right? It's the main way. But because we're not happy to sit down and chant all day, therefore all these other aspects are added to keep us busy.
So essentially it's that meditation, whether it's
but it's the meditation on serving Krishna with the right mood, right? So to do that, you have to meditate. You have to be conscious of what you're doing, conscious of the environment, conscious of who you are, you know, conscious of all those things to see that it's going nicely. But when you're doing all that to please Krishna, that's what nourishes. It's not a separate thing. That's what I was saying before. It's not that we sit back and we're trying to get this mood. That's the weakness of the new age, because it's all about this more subtle and peaceful, but it's all about enjoying yourself on that subtle, peaceful platform. Go and sit down next, you know, go outside and there's a little brook there, and okay, there's a little clearing, so we'll do our yoga here, and then sitting there and oh, isn't this like, can you feel that? Yeah, I can feel it, you know. You know, all it is that in the gym they're going, feel the burn, they're all going, yeah, but here you're going, feel the peace, yeah. You know, it's the same thing. It's just you use different words like that, you know. So, but the problem is then that's all they get. They're not actually the process that they can apply that even in the city. So you're doing that. The sages go out into the forest so that they're able to identify it. Once they've identified it, He's the sagest when they come into the city. They're not disturbed. Narad Muni's not disturbed in the city. Right? So because it's not about enjoying it, it's about being in that state. Well, in that state, then you do something, right? So the problem with the impersonal is I'm in, or karma and jnana is I'm in that state, and I'm trying to enjoy the state. While the devotee, I'm in that state, and I'm using that state to serve Krishna, because that state's the best position to serve Krishna from. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was asking, so meditation is the technique, but for the devotee, it's
meditational
service to devotional service to Krishna.
It's absorption in Krishna. It's not the technique necessarily of meditation. It's absorption. Right? Because samadhi is beyond that. That's what you're trying to do. Meditation is just the mechanics of absorption. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the kid likes to do something. Does he have to meditate? He automatically is absorbed in that thing. But something he doesn't want to do, but he has to do, like do his homework, right? Then he has to meditate. Okay, yeah, no, the homework is there. I have to do that. So he goes and sits. And okay, what do I need? I got to look at my books. Okay, now focus. Okay, like that. Then you use the technique of meditation. So meditation's not this. See, the yogis put that on the top. The Mayavadis put it on the top. It's not the top. The top is the natural affection that's there, that flowing of that natural affection. Does that make sense?
That's pretty much forcing you to meditate, like you've got no other choice.
It's not forcing you to meditate because you're doing something you want. It's just automatically meditating.
Yeah, sorry. That
word. Yeah, like that. Yeah. Okay. So, continue. Oh, no, I'm finished. Okay, now I'll explain how the prana produces these things. Okay. Wow, it goes on for some time, this one.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura Devana ki. That's just in their own personal reading and stuff like that. The point is anything that going through these things. That's the point of the of this Amnaya. Amnaya Tattva Niyas, that line of the course, is so that you appreciate all the technicalities that the acharyas are talking about that are already there in Prabhupada's course. Just he uses words that are more accessible. You know, we don't know all these. You know.
And that's the subsidiary studies?
Yes, so that's what this third year is, because in the first 2 years there is no subsidiary. You have the direct reading and then the thematic study of the main book. And then in the third year is all the supportive literature. When we get to Bhagavatam, then you have the direct reading, but then the studies, they're the supportive and the analytical. Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, the first year, that's your main course, and the second and third are combined as one course. That's the other one. So here we need three. It's three courses. There, it's not three courses. There's only two.
When you were talking about compiling the study guide for the next version of the Mecca, you told that he wanted to get into this to
it's just more things going to come out like that. So it's coming out now anyway, but it's nice that these things are a little bit more familiar before, then some of these things are just easy. You don't have to go into as much detail. In other words, nothing would be lost. It's just they would have been familiar with things all the way through like this, so that would have worked out. You know, but that'll be introduced. That's what he's going to work on next.
Yeah, he's going to get the transcription of the classes and the books done. Because he's got resources of the different books, but then the resources of the transcription of the classes.
That's there, yeah. But the element of just there's points that are made in these small books that are just bringing out details. So that's what we want to see that it's added. Like that. So I felt in the first and second year there could have been more of that added. Those same things can be put into here. Like that. So the same quotes would be, you see them over the 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And then when it comes up later, they'll come there too.
Yeah, you'd be a great resource for the next little teacher.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.